keeping your pets safe through the holidays and the winter. Yikes, it's cold outside. When you tried to take out your terrier or poodle or beagle this morning, did you get that look? The, do I really have to do this look? Well, it is only December, and this is just the beginning of the cold weather. So it's a good time for reminders about how to protect your pets from the winter cold and ice. We're also in the holiday season, and that means lots of hazards. Tinsel, turkey skin, chocolate, all enticing to someone's pet. Perhaps you have a lab who will eat anything. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll talk with three local veterinarians about the kinds of pet problems they see this time of year. They'll also answer your questions about your pet's health and well-being. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It's pretty cold and icy out there, not the best weather for walking your dog. And the plethora of holiday parties can present sweet and dangerous temptations to our beloved four-legged pets. Well, today we're going to discuss the challenges wintertime brings to caring for our pets. We have a panel of veterinary experts in the studio to offer advice and bring us up to date on taking care of our furry friends throughout the year. Dr. Don Davis is with Kate Veterinary Clinic in South Portland. Dr. Ginger Brown Johnson is with the Veterinary and Rehabilitation Center of Cape Elizabeth. And Dr. Una Wack is with the Falmouth Veterinary Hospital. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you have questions about your dog, cat, or pocket pet? Were you thinking of getting a new pet as a gift this season? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Dr. Johns, this morning my dog did not want to go outside and stayed out for a very brief amount of time. This is self-protection. There are certain animals that really should not go out very long in this weather, right?
That's so true. With the short coats and the compact bodies, you know, they really don't have the protection against winter weather. So, you know, whether it's coats or booties or even just wiping their paws when they come inside to make sure that you're getting any ice melt products off, a lot of things to think about.
And the coats really work. A little sweater, a little coat really does work. It's not just cute.
They often enjoy putting them on, too. I hear, you know, Chihuahua owner coming in and says she loves her sweater, you know.
Oh, my goodness. That's so funny. So, Una, Ginger mentioned the ice melt products. I understand there are some pet safe dog ice melt products. First of all, do they actually work on the ice and are they actually safe for the animals?
They do work on the ice. I actually have a jar right by my front door and they may not be quite as effective, but certainly a little bit of sand added in is a good idea. But you're right about the pet melt products that are not dog safe. They certainly can be caustic to their feet that the dogs will start licking and causing some trauma.
Okay. Don, what else are you thinking about? What kind of advice are you giving patients and their humans this time of year?
Yeah, I say that you really have to know your dog individually and make sure they're acclimated to it, because what would be acceptable for one pet may not be acceptable for another. So the different coats, like we mentioned, different amount of body fat, but also just looking for the signs that they're uncomfortable. So a lot of the dogs with the really fuzzy feet will notice that they'll be holding one paw up for a little while and then shifting and holding another paw up and just picking up on the signs that it might be a little too long for the exposure when it's really cold.
Okay, we're in the midst of holiday party season, and I didn't know before helping putting together this program that it's not just chocolate and poinsettias we need to be watching out for. Turkey skin, really?
Turkey skin's a big one. Anything, you know, we're eating such rich, tasty foods, fatty foods these days, so we are always cognizant and worried about pancreatitis as veterinarians. That's one of the most common things that we'll see from eating unusual fatty foods, including turkey skin. So your dog is not used to these levels of fats. The pancreas secretes digestive enzymes and over-secretes them until it makes them very sick.
Aw, what else are you looking out for?
Those tasty nut packages that you're getting as presents. There's certain nuts that are toxic to dogs, including macadamia nuts. So that's something that not everyone appreciates, and they give their dog a snack, and that's not always a good thing.
Don, what do you see this time of year? What do you see that you see more this time of year than other times of the year?
Yeah, I think we see a lot of upper respiratory tract infections. We see a lot of stress-induced problems. So having family and friends over for the holidays cause a little GI upset or different behavioral issues. So kind of keeping that in mind that it, sometimes family visits are stressful for us, but also for the pets.
I read just this morning, if you're going to have a party, maybe have a quiet place for your animal to go.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
I hadn't thought about that because my dog's the one who wants to be in the middle of the action and get as much love and attention as possible, but not all do.
Right, and most of us show our affection by giving snacks. And so not only do you have to remind your family not to give a lot of food, but when all the neighbors and extended family are over, the way they show their affection is by giving a little leftovers of what they're eating. And so that can really add up.
So if you're in the market for a holiday gift as a pet, you've promised the kids a puppy or a kitty. What do you think about this time of year? I'm guessing it's December 15th. That puppy or kitten has already been chosen if it's a Christmas present, but maybe not. What kind of guidance do you give for families?
This really is a lifelong commitment. You're looking at a pocket pet, you know, maybe 2 or 4 years. At a bird, you're looking at 70 years.
Okay. A pocket pet. What's a pocket pet?
Oh, thank you. So, you know, something like a gerbil or a hamster, something that you might buy at a pet store. But you're looking for a lifelong commitment depending on the life of that individual pet. So you really have to consider that. These take, you know, a lot of consideration and research, you know, especially if you're getting a specific breed and time to figure these things out. They're not spur of the moment purchases.
And how long did you say some birds can live?
70 years for our large birds.
Oh, my goodness. That is a commitment.
Yeah.
Any thoughts from either of you on pets for Christmas or puppies or kitties?
You know, as Ginger mentioned, just the time that it takes to look after a pet is really something that you need to think about. You know, walking a dog is not just something that can happen in 5 minutes. So making sure your family's schedule is going to accommodate a new pet. And also financially, you know, that new puppy or kitty is going to need vaccinations and to be spayed or neutered or various health problems that crop up as young animals. So making sure that there's a financial awareness of what you're getting into is important.
All right. Well, if you'd like to join the conversation, we have three local veterinarians here. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566, send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Don Davis, it's not always the things you think, right? I mean, people are known to be careful about poinsettias, about certain kinds of food. But you see string, dogs that ingest string.
Well, and particularly we see cats that ingest string. So the thing that we worry about when they are ingesting foreign bodies are, one, if it's toxic, but also if something gets stuck in the gastrointestinal tract. So with dogs, it's usually more of an object, a ball or a sock, a wash rag, a toy. With cats, if they start ingesting a bit of string, I almost feel like they don't know what to do with it, and they keep ingesting more and more. And that creates a string foreign body, which can lead to a very life-threatening condition where we often have to do surgery to remove. And during Christmas, there's a lot of packages with strings and ribbon. We also see it with fishing line, dental floss. All of those really long, thin strings can really be problematic. And around this time of year, we do often see that.
Another bit of advice I saw this morning for cat owners is secure that Christmas tree. And I hadn't thought of that before. We have a tweet from Jim. Why don't dogs learn not to eat what makes them sick? Do we have dog psychologists here in the room?
That's a really good question.
They're so driven by their nose, right? So, and we have so many different things that they wouldn't have even experienced before in our lives. So if it smells good, they're going to try it. You know, every day they're encountering something that they've never encountered before. If it smells good, they're going to try it.
I think they also live in the now that, like, oh, it's delicious right now. They don't know that tomorrow you're going to have a really sore belly. So they don't think that forward. So.
And what smells good to a dog doesn't necessarily smell good to us. For example, smelly socks.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so I want to ask, what's the strangest thing each of you has ever found in an animal, a cat or a dog?
Well, that's probably a long list, right. But one of the better x-rays I've ever seen was a hard plastic googly-eyed frog, and you could see this frog looking at you on the x-ray, and it was awesome.
So. Oh, no. What about you, Dr. Davis?
I did remove a Gumby doll, a similar issue where you could see the little Gumby doll was bent in an odd position, just kind of waving at us on the x-ray. Yeah.
I've had clients come in wondering if their pet ate a diamond ring or a even an Apple Watch, you know, things that they were really valuable and worrying about. But most of the time when we've taken the x-rays, we don't see them. So.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow. Well, we're going to go up to Caribou and Jamie. Jamie, before you ask your question, I want to ask what your thermometer said when you woke up this morning.
I think it was one. I'm not sure.
Not one. Well, above zero. Okay. Okay.
It was above zero, I think. Hi there, you guys. Thank you from Tropical Caribou. yeah, my question is two parts, actually, is that we've had dogs, we have dogs now, and oftentimes we make batches of dog food, and we mix it with the kibble as well, and the batches of dog food usually consists of, like, ground beef, vegetables, all that sort of stuff, and I puree it, and we just portion out with the kibble. My question is, what do you think about people food with the dogs, and also portion-wise for dogs? Those are my questions.
That's a good idea. I've had that question when I run out of dog food and she likes little scrambled eggs and Cheerios. How much to give?
There are actually some good online resources that can tell you about how many kilocalories there are per cup of rice and things like that. There's one called balanceit.com that people can access. And it gives you the relative kind of nutrient and profiles of what you're adding in, and then it helps you balance out their entire diet. So that's something that you can think about doing. There's some good books as well about homemade dog foods. So.
Remember, when you're feeding a kibble diet, that it is meant to be a complete and balanced diet. So whenever you're adding something into it, you actually may be throwing off that balance. Homemade diets are great too, but they would be made separately from kibble. So to mix a complete and balanced diet with a homemade diet may not make as much sense as you think.
All right. Well, Jamie, thanks so much for calling in with your question. Going to the other corner of the state now. I love it when this happens. Nanette in South Berwick. Hi, Nanette. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I go by a beagle every day on my way to work, and he lives on a 4x4 concrete slab in the middle of a field with a cage dropped over him. He does have a dog house, and the concrete slab is kept clean because I check it every day. But he is, other than his dog house, he is totally subjected to whatever the weather brings because he's in the middle of a field where the sun heats the concrete and the cold, I'm sure, even though, you know, again, the snow is kept off it, and feces, it's kept clean, but he never gets exercise, and he has been there for years. And I have written him a letter explaining how disturbing it is to me, and I have contacted the local dog officer, and it seems that hunting dogs, one of which is a beagle, can be kept in some pretty uncaring conditions.
All right, thoughts about dogs and a lot of dogs in America kept outdoors all year.
Yeah, we really have to think about, you know, that they have access to shelter, like you've mentioned, to food and water. And certainly we would all want them to be surrounded with love and affection as well. And I really appreciate your care for this beagle and your worrying about him. It sounds like you've done a lot of things to look out for him as you can.
Nanette, thanks for your call. Moving to Portland and Heather. Hi, Heather. Go ahead.
Hi. I live in downtown Portland, so I can't control what rock salt my neighbors throw out. So I'm wondering if you have any recommendations for brands to use to wipe the salt off my dog's paws.
Certainly just washing their feet with water goes a long way. There are some products that you can apply to their feet before you go out. There's something called Musher's Wax that a lot of people like using. I keep a can of cooking spray in my car and I spritz my dog's feet before we go for a run. And that prevents snowballs from building up, but is also helps make a little layer of protection between some of the caustic things that are out there on the road.
Cooking spray. Interesting tip. Go ahead, Ginger.
And wearing booties, of course. Then you don't even have to worry what's down there.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, my dog does not like booties, but so I'm going to try the cooking spray tip. That's a good one. Heather, thanks and good luck to you. We'll go to Ryan calling from South Portland, if I can click on that.
Hello?
Ryan, go ahead.
I actually was just going to piggyback off of what the veterinarian was just talking about. My cattle dog dislikes anything on his feet. Mm-hmm. At all. So we've, Musher's Secret has saved us many winters and up on the hill and now in South Portland.
Remembering to trim the hair around their feet too, so that it's not as likely to create those icicles and matting around their feet.
Sure.
Yep.
Great. Thanks, Ryan, for your tip. Here's an email from Tig. Our golden doodle, Albus, has a penchant for eating dirty socks. Mm-hmm. Last night, he had his second surgery over 3 years for a dirty sock getting stuck in his intestine. We've done our best to keep the socks out of reach, but is there anything else that can be done?
I have had a dog with multiple foreign body surgeries, so I'm really sorry, Tig. That's unfortunate. You certainly can, you know, try to institute lockdown procedures on all socks in the house, but I think things happen. For dogs who are really bad, thinking about a basket muzzle when they're not in your view is, you know, it sounds kind of crazy, but they really don't mind them. So that might be something to consider. The other thing that you might want to think about is pet health insurance, just to pay for your next surgery, because it can happen. So.
Is there anything behavioral you'd recommend? I know when I was growing up, we had a dog that would jump up on a couch. And so my mom read to put a mouse trap under a newspaper. When the dog jumped up, it scared her so much she didn't do it again. Anything behavioral to keep them away from smelly socks?
Well, a leave it command is always so important to teach, but then you still have to be there. So the questions of what to do when you're not there, and something like socks could be in any place. So it's hard to train them like you could train to stay off a couch when a sock could be anywhere.
But thinking about treat toys is something that might, you know, distract them or engage them otherwise.
And I would say if you know that your dog has eaten a sock, sometimes if you get to them early, you can avoid actually having to have surgery. So if you have seen your dog actually consume the sock, sometimes we can actually, as weird as it sounds, make them vomit, depending on how large it is, or use an endoscope. Where there's no actual incision or surgery. It is an anesthetic procedure, but that would be much less traumatic and less expensive for everybody if we know that they have actually eaten it.
How does one know that their dog has eaten a sock if you don't see that?
Oh, no, you would have to see that. Yeah, a lot of times when you try to get it out of their mouth, the first thing they do is swallow it faster. And so people do call us often and say that, I saw my pet just eat something. What do I do now? And oftentimes you can avoid a costly surgery by getting to it early.
All right. Well, thanks, Tig, for your question. I'm sure you're not alone in that question. We are going to take a quick break. If you'd like to join the conversation, we have local veterinarians on the program today. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Evergreen Home Performance, offering energy-efficient windows and insulation to help homeowners achieve year-round comfort. More at evergreenyourhome.com. And Skudik Institute, a nonprofit partner of Acadia National Park, working to advance ecosystem science. Learn how you can support their work at skudikinstitute.org.
Chaos is inevitable, but is it always bad? This week, two very different perspectives on chaos from doctors on the front lines of the Ebola epidemic.
People were scared. It was a crisis.
And they forgot to put an exit in.
To the messiness of democracy.
He is a master of using chaos to his advantage.
On the next Hidden Brain from NPR.
Join us for Hidden Brain Sunday morning at 11.
When Shabana was just 6 years old, she went undercover.
Every day was like a mission.
Like something straight out of a spy movie.
We left home at random times. We came home at random times. We couldn't pass the same convenience store every day.
And all of this stealth, all this secrecy, just so she could go to school.
In order to get an education.
Going undercover, that's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
And join us for the TED Radio Hour. That's tomorrow afternoon at 1 and again on Wednesday evening at 11 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, veterinary advice for all of you pet owners. With me in the studio, our panel of veterinarians, Dr. Ginger Brown Johnson with Veterinary and Rehabilitation Center of Cape Elizabeth, Dr. Una Wack with Falmouth Veterinary Hospital, and Dr. Don Davis with Cape Veterinary Clinic in South Portland. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We were talking about turkey skin earlier, but what about candy? We know that chocolate is not good for dogs. I've learned through experience that it depends how big your dog is and how pure the chocolate is, how bad it is. But what else are we looking out for? Treats. What kind of treats?
Yeah, so I'm really concerned about xylitol these days, which for as an artificial sweetener for people is safe, but for dogs can cause hypoglycemia, too low blood sugars, can cause seizures, can cause liver disease. And so we can see it in candy, we can see it in gum, and sometimes even in sugar-free peanut butters.
Okay, so sugar-free peanut butter, regular peanut butter is okay.
Because it's a sugar substitute.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Let's see here. We're going to go to Mike calling from Shapley. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a 12-year-old lab, and in the last couple of months, he's refused to eat dry dog food. And we've tried Maine brands like Ukinuma, Iams, Purina Pro, but he just won't eat it. And so I've started, we sometimes mix in hamburger, and he'll eat all the hamburger and leave the dry food. So I'm at the point where I'm giving him scrambled egg a couple times a day. In the morning, he has like treats. He gets like small milk bones. He gets marrow bones, Alpo variety snaps, which are like little wafers. And he's, you know, he eats those right up. And at noontime, I give him a Purina Busy Bone. And he goes outside, and he's loving that. But as far as his dry dog food, he will not touch it.
You know, at his age, he's considered a senior pet. Sometimes there are some health conditions that can decrease their appetite. So for your lab, it really would be a good idea to think about seeing your veterinarian to maybe do some blood work and a good exam to see if there's anything else going on with him.
Okay. With a younger dog, when he or she decides not to eat their food anymore, is it usually just because they've changed their taste, want something new?
Well, decreased appetite can really be a sign of many illnesses in any age. We look for things like mouth pain, but also other illnesses like kidney disease or liver disease. Many times the first sign is a decreased appetite or eating slower. Maybe they're eating the same amount, but they're eating slower or playing with their food a little bit or sometimes turning their head to the side. So really, I think it would all start with a good physical exam to rule out any problems. And then beyond that, if everything is normal, sometimes you do have a picky eater or a personality. I saw one cat that would only eat the X-shaped foods, would leave the circles or the triangles and would only eat X-shaped. So there are behavioral issues, but you would always want to rule out a medical issue first.
Thanks, Mike, for your call, and good luck to you. We're going to go to Emily calling from Bethel. Hi, Emily. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a yellow lab, 8.5 years old, and when he was a puppy, he had bone chips removed from his elbows that were fairly large, and now we're seeing the residual effects that we were anticipating with the with arthritis coming in. And our vet has recommended laser therapy, and so we've tried that. We've gone around about 3 rounds so far, but how do you know if he's benefiting from it? We see him limping after a little too much exertion, so we kind of, you know, balance that. But how do you know if it's the right thing? And then my second question is, how do you avert a poop-eating dog?
We'll start with the laser surgery or the laser treatment.
Yeah, so cold laser therapy is designed to work with inflammation and pain, and it is a good natural type therapy that doesn't have any or very few contraindications. You're really looking for, you know, the mobility that your dog exhibits and also his willingness to go around the regular functions of daily life in terms of if it's working or not. Certainly the level of lameness in a forelimb lameness with more severe lameness, as you'll also see, often see a head bob. So they're trying to lift the weight of their head off their foot as that foot goes down. But with more subtle ones, you really have to slow them down to see it. If you're seeing them move more quickly, they'll be able to disguise it better. So watching for subtle signs of lameness and watching for his enthusiasm to go about his regular activities of daily life.
And how about Emily's more refined question? What to do about a poop-eating dog?
Buy a shovel. there are different products out there on the market that you can try. Fresh pineapple. It has enzymes in it that supposedly makes our poop taste more disgusting. Mm-hmm. Also, there's some meat tenderizers that you can also try. But really, just cleaning your yard as frequently as possible is probably the best solution.
Right. And we have used those products. We have some available that you put in your dog's food. So that works if they're eating their own stool. But if the neighbors are not cleaning up their yard, that isn't really effective. And just my own personal experience, I find that it works for some amount of time. Mm. You know, maybe we can avoid that behavior by using those products for a month or 2 months. But it seems like the dogs that are prone to do that will go back to it. So unfortunately, I think it's keeping the area picked up.
All right, Emily, thanks for your questions. Going to Hollowell and Kristen. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, Jennifer, and thanks for the show. It's great. I have a quick story and a question. We have a very dynamic Westie that we got about 7 years ago as a rescue, and we were careless on Christmas morning when we had a big bag of chocolates that were individually wrapped. And we went out for a cross-country ski and came back, and to our horror, the bag was ripped open, and there were a few candy wrappers around, and we were afraid that Henry had eaten the whole bag. It turns out that he hid the chocolates all around the house, under cushions, under furniture.
Smart.
Finding chocolates. Yeah, it was very amazing. We were finding chocolates for months, actually, under things where he hid them. So I wondered, is that unusual behavior? how often does that happen with dogs, I wondered, and have wondered since. And also, that morning or that day, I called a poison control number for pets that had been recommended to me. I don't remember that number, but I thought it would be helpful for listeners to know that there is a resource, an emergency number, and I don't know if you have that handy or can share that with listeners. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kristen. That's a great story.
So the ASPCA poison control line, I did write it down knowing we would be here today. It's 888-426-4435. You should be aware that there are fees associated with that, and it's great to call your own veterinarian, or if your own veterinarian hasn't opened, the emergency veterinarian that your vet uses as well.
Okay, and we'll also post that on our Facebook page. Let me ask you generally, though, if your dog gets into something, which most dogs will, and you look it up on the internet and it's got xylitol or it's not good for them, is it a good idea to just feed them some hydrogen peroxide right then and make them vomit? You're making a face. No.
Well, it's a big question about how much, right? Because the reason it makes dogs vomit is because it's an irritant to the esophagus. If you give too much, you could cause harm. And some things are caustic not only when they're going down, but when they're coming up. And so there are definitely things that we don't want them to vomit up as well.
All right, Kristen, thanks for calling in with your story. Going back up to Aroostook County and Presque Isle and Bill. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon, and thank you, and Merry Christmas to everybody. I'm calling because we have two Great Danes. One's 195 pounds. The other one is 210 pounds. And we bought them chew toys, and, of course, those last probably approximately 15 minutes to a half an hour before they're completely obliterated. There was a story on TV about 2 or 3 weeks ago, a warning about certain rawhide toys, for example, pig's ears, pig's knuckles, anything rawhide chews, and how dangerous they were. There had been numerous deaths of dogs who had gone ahead and been given those, and they became very ill, and unfortunately they did not survive their illness from, and it was associated with those chews. And my wife and I, we don't normally try to endorse any particular product, but we discovered that there was a product out in the market, and I'm just recommending this to any owners who have dogs, to, you know, if it can save, you know, an owner, a dog, from becoming highly ill, or you know, and the owner having to go through such a, you know, a sad situation, stressful situation. It's called a Kong. And the great thing about it is it comes in small, medium, large, and extra large, which, of course, our dogs had were given. And the great thing was they're just made of rubber, thick rubber, and they're hollow inside. And
sure, and you can put treats on the inside of them and have them work on them. For you guys are all nodding.
Yeah, we often suggest that. Really, from time to time, there are different products that you'll hear in the news or see on TV. Really, anything can get stuck, particularly if it's the wrong size. So if you're feeding a really large dog like this a small toy, the tendency is for them to swallow it whole as opposed to spend the time chewing it apart. I've known one dog that could tear apart a Kong, but it's one of the few brands that we do suggest, because they are pretty indestructible. And if you use the right size, then that's one of the safer large chew treats, I would say.
Bill, so thanks so much for calling in. I'd love to see your Great Danes. And my dog is a dog who has destroyed a Kong. So the extra tough Kong,
yeah.
The indestructible one. So we have an email from Lisa. I have a black lab who loves to swim. We live near Willard Beach and take our dog there frequently, even for short walks when it's cold. I can't keep him from wading in the water. Is it okay to allow dogs, even during cold Maine winters, to swim in the cold ocean? We've all seen, especially Labrador retrievers, swimming in the cold ocean in the middle of the winter. Is that okay?
If your dog wants to do it, they certainly can, but I would limit their time in the water. They will get chilled. But if it's their quality of life, let them go for a splash.
There we go. Okay, Kathleen in Farmington, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling. Kathleen, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. My question is it necessary to give dogs live in Maine flea and tick medicine all year and worming medicine all year?
Good question.
That's a great question, Kathleen. I would say yes to both questions. A lot of people don't realize that fleas are worse in our springs and our falls. So I see more fleas in our falls after people have already decided that the season is over than I do during the summer. Ticks are so hardy. We will see them just about year round. And heartworm disease as well. Mosquitoes are going to come out as soon as we get any type of thaw or warmer weather. So while we used to have very decisive climate periods, we just see those changing.
A lot of the heartworm medications, too, do have intestinal parasite prevention. So one of our earlier callers was mentioning about their dogs enjoying the poopsicles. So that is also something to think about, that you are deworming them every month, which is a really good thing to do for your dog.
Well, and keeping in mind, too, that fleas can be transmitted all year. So even when it's terribly cold outside, maybe they're less likely to pick them up outside. But if you have friends with pets, if you have one pet that goes outside, one pet that stays inside, it's so easy for them to be transmitted, and that can be transmitted all year. And if you've ever gotten a flea infestation, you will know how hard it is and how expensive it is to ever remedy that. So I find it much easier to go with prevention.
All right, Kathleen, thanks for your call. Terry on Facebook writes, just wanted to add a few thoughts to today's discussion on pet safety. Strings were mentioned as a possible problem. To elaborate on that, strings that were used to bind meat, i.e. roasts, whole chickens, are especially appealing for both cats and dogs and pose a risk of gastric obstruction. Corn cobs are also problematic, very appealing for dogs, especially if butter was used. They also pose obstruction possibilities. Also, bittersweet, the pretty berries often used for holiday decor, are extremely toxic to pets. Good to know.
Yeah, and the strings that are involved in the meat, they are, I guess, more prone to it because they're smelly. Other things, I've removed skewer sticks. Paper towels that have been soaked in grease if they eat enough of them. Yeah, so anything that has been around food and has that scent is going to be a little more tempting. Corn cobs are infamous, so thank you for bringing that up. they do tend to get stuck and cause lots of problems as well.
All right. Well, we do have to take another break. But before we take that break, a word about Monday's program. We're going to discuss organ donation, how it works once you've decided to be an organ or tissue donor, and what happens afterwards. Email your comments or questions to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet up, or post to our Facebook page. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Freemasons in Maine, supporting Maine Public Radio's efforts to provide knowledge, wisdom, and entertainment to the people of Maine. Portland Pottery, with its 27th annual holiday show, featuring more than 90 artists opening today. PortlandPottery.com. And Memic, with a mission of sending millions back to the Maine economy each year as part of their plan to make safety pay. Learn more at Memic.com.
The hydropower that's being sought to solve New England's energy needs comes from massive dams hundreds of miles north in Quebec. They're a point of pride for some and a point of suffering for others.
We here in Quebec, the little French Canadians who were building those huge dams.
Everything was lost without any kind of compensation.
The other end of the line. This week on Next from the New England News Collaborative.
Next is coming up in about 20 minutes at 2 o'clock after Maine Calling here on Maine Public Radio. If you've ever wanted to visit Iceland, there's almost nothing like it with its black sands, midnight sun, and unique culture. If you've thought about visiting Iceland, you can join Maine Public Travel next June from the 17th through the 23rd. We'll visit geothermal pools, spectacular waterfalls, and our own Jennifer Rooks will host a talk show at Roof, Iceland's public broadcasting organization. For more information, please visit mainepublic.org and click on Education, or call 1-877-479-7040. And thanks.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling today on the program, Pet Advice from Veterinarians. Joining me today, Una Wack with Falmouth Veterinary Hospital, Don Davis with Cape Veterinary Clinic, and Ginger Brown Johnson with the Veterinary and Rehabilitation Center. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Something that came up last time we were talking with veterinarians, but I think is important to repeat, is we're seeing more marijuana in homes now that it's legal in Maine. Are you all seeing pets who have ingested it?
We definitely are. Pets accidentally eat edibles, or they'll just eat the marijuana that may be available to them. And certain products in the marijuana are pretty toxic to dogs, that they'll come in pretty drunk, and leaking urine seems to be the sign that we see with them a lot.
Not funny to give your dog or cat some marijuana.
Exactly. Yep.
We've had cases that have needed multiple days of hospitalization before they can metabolize it.
Wow. And back to the holiday theme, people like to buy gifts for their pets. I'm not going to say anything beyond that. What are some bad ideas, bad gifts for pets?
If you go into the pet store, I often see things that I cringe at, that I wish that people knew more about and didn't give so much as pets and as gifts for their pets. Specifically, things that can hurt teeth. I think a lot of people don't realize all the things that can break teeth. And when you have a dog with a broken tooth, you're either looking at an extraction or a root canal, which people really don't want to consider. So my rule of thumb, Kongs are a great toy because they are soft enough that they're not going to break teeth, but you should be able to put your finger nail into that material and make a little indentation. And if you can't, it's probably hard enough to break a tooth. The other thing that I see sold as toys that can harm teeth are tennis balls. Everybody thinks that tennis balls are good toys for pets, but the fuzz on them really acts like an emery board and wears down an enamel, and that can't be replaced, and that's the protective shell of the tooth.
All right. An email from Fran. My cat, darling mine, she is 19 years old. At very inconvenient times, for example, 3 a.m., she is a caterwauling tiger. She sounds very pathetic for maybe 6 to 7 caterwauls. First, why does she do this and how to handle it? She does this upon no provocation and in any time of the night or day.
Well, certainly your darling mine is a vintage kitty, and we do recognize dementia in our senior pets just like we do in our senior people, so that might be something that she's experiencing. But again, there may be something else going on with her, so an exam with your veterinarian is a good idea.
Yes, and an increased yowling of or vocalization in an older kitty can be a warning sign of possible thyroid disease. It's one of the actual listed clinical signs. So even sometimes when you think something is not necessarily significant, it's always good to tell your veterinarian because there are some clues like that that can help us narrow down what we're looking for.
We're going to go to Jeannie calling from Auburn. Hi, Jeannie. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a dog that has very bad body odor. I will give him a bath, and he's fine. And then maybe 3 or 4 weeks later, he has this odor, and it gets on his blankets, it gets on his bed. Could you give me an idea of what's causing this?
Is it a musky odor? What kind of odor?
Boy, I don't know. I don't think it's a musky odor. No, it's just kind of a stinky odor. I really don't know how to describe it.
I think, as John mentioned before, you know, this is one of the signs that we might look out for in terms of a sign of disease. And so I think, Jeannie, you're really astute to wonder if this could be an issue. And it definitely could be. Skin infections often manifest in odor. And underlying those skin infections can be hormonal diseases or allergy. So I would definitely bring that question to your veterinarian.
Good luck, Jeannie. We have an email from Rachel. I wanted to follow up on the conversation about pets for Christmas. I work with Friends of Willow and Southern Maine Rabbit Rescue Organization. Many people don't realize that a rabbit can live 7 to 10 years and can require vet services similar in cost to cats and dogs versus a pocket pet like a hamster. And of course, consider adopting instead of shopping for your pet. You guys are nodding. Agreed, right? Okay, so we'll move on to John calling from Herman. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a, he's almost 12 years old. He's a toller. And beautiful dog, but he was exposed to a loud noise at a very young age. And was always, I actually got him for bird hunting, but he's afraid of the gun. So I never really took him hunting much, and I decided at the ripe age of, you know, almost 12, I would try him. So recently, a few weeks back, I took him out, and I actually was on a preserve where a guy set out some pheasants. And the dog did wonderfully, and we shot over the dog, and the dog wasn't afraid at all. And I thought, oh, my God, I should have been hunting him all the time. Lo and behold, the trainer turns to me a little later. He goes, you know, your dog might be losing his hearing. and so later that night I tested, I was behind the dog and I called his name a few times and he didn't turn around, didn't focus on me. And he'd been doing a couple other things lately that were different. Like we'd be sitting in, you know, just reading books or whatever. And all of a sudden the dog would jump up off his bed and run and try to jump in my wife's lap, or he'd just take off out of the room. Almost like he's in his silent little world and is scared out of his wits. So, two questions. What is this indicative of something else that might be going on, like something worse than the dog going deaf? That's one question, and should I get him checked out? And B, will they go deaf this quickly? We think they might have come on in the last month or two.
Okay, good questions.
So it can be indicative of something else going on, particularly ear infections can lead to hearing loss. I would also say that sometimes it's very difficult to know exactly when the hearing has changed because they accommodate so well. So it may actually be that the hearing has been diminished somewhat leading up to this. I do find that one of the first signs are sometimes easily startled. So usually if your dog is asleep on the couch, it's still almost impossible to sneak up on them. They know when you're there. But with a pet that's having trouble hearing, sometimes you reach over or move and they're not aware that you're there, and they will become startled more easily. But again, I think it would be something that would definitely be worth an exam and a discussion with your veterinarian about, We do see it happen quickly, but I think the more common thing that I see is a gradual decrease. But sometimes we don't know that it's gradually decreasing until they get to sort of a cutoff point where it becomes noticeable.
All right, John, thanks for your call. Moving on to Ellsworth and Maggie. Hi, Maggie. Go ahead.
Hi. I hope you can hear me all right.
Yeah.
First of all, let me say how compassionate these three vets sound that are on. So I hope they will take my question in the best light. I've worked with animals and people who fall between the cracks of the healthcare system for years and years. And more and more, I've come across a lot of people who may have adopted dogs and can pay for, you know, normal kinds of fees and things. But when something happens suddenly, they can't pay, and most veterinarians will not let them pay month by month, for example. And some of these people can't afford, you know, even to have the care credit cards. And the other day, a friend of mine, her greyhound had a fall and his leg was broken in many places, and she didn't have the money to take him to a vet. So is there anything being done, or can I help with something being done in the state sponsored by veterinarians themselves that can help build up a fund, creative ways to build up a fund for animals, either of the homeless or for just working people who don't have big pocketbooks?
Thanks, Maggie. Do you all know of any programs out there?
So there are national ones and certainly local ones as well. The AVMA has a national fund that is well recognized. And our hospital, and I assume your hospitals do as well, have their own individual funds.
Thanks, Maggie. So check that out, and we'll try to find that and put that on our Maine Calling Facebook page, the AVMA fund, to help out. Tight on time, but we got a couple in. An email from Arlene. Our rescued rose-breasted cockatoo came to us with a plucking habit. Love and attention has slowed this significantly, but not eliminated it. Nothing we've tried has worked. Any suggestions?
We were just discussing before that none of us are bird experts, but certainly cockatoos are very intelligent, long-lived birds, and they do come with a lot of mental trauma sometimes when they've been rescued. Cockatoos sometimes are placed on Prozac to help with this habit. So if you do have a bird veterinarian, that's a discussion that you might have with them.
All right. We'll go to Anna, who's calling from York. Hi, Anna. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes. Excuse my voice. I might be hard to hear, but we think he's about 7 or 8 year old. He's a pit bull lab mix, as far as we can tell. He recently went through a debulking surgery at kind of a tricky place to remove a tumor in his wrist leg area, a front leg, and it's grown back quite large in the last few months, so we're going to be having to amputate his leg due to the cancer. So right now we're kind of dealing with what it's going to look like for his rehab and kind of what we can do to make the transition easier for him. So just wondering if anybody can comment on that.
That's a great question. I'd love to help you out with rehabilitation. Is a wonderful thing to do. We do prehab for our amputee patients. So before they actually have to have their limb amputated, they can come in and learn some of the exercises, some of the modalities that we will be using postoperatively. So I would encourage you to seek out that type of help. You know, carts can be very helpful in these situations, especially with an older pet that may have other limbs that may be challenged as well. Thinking about a cart early, acclimating them to that can be helpful in the long run.
Anna, thanks for your question. Really tight on time. We'll see what I can squeeze in. Susan in Belfast, if you could make your comment or question brief, that'd be great.
Sure. I just wanted to make a suggestion on some alternatives to marrow bones or bully sticks, which my dogs have had trouble with. And so now I only give them raw carrots to chew on, and I make sure that I'm there in case they, you know, choke on them or something like that. But they seem to love them, and I just wanted to see what the vets think about giving your dogs carrots.
Susan, that's a great alternative to marrow bones, and it's also a nice low-calorie snack. So for dogs who are a little chunky, that's a wonderful treat.
Great. We have a call we're not going to get to asking if marrow bones are okay. Are they?
Generally not. As Ginger said, we do see a lot of fractured teeth with it, and then the marrow on the inside can get kind of nasty. So,
okay, well, there we go. Thank you guys so much. This always goes so quickly. The voice you just heard, Dr. Una Wack with Falmouth Veterinary Hospital in Falmouth. Dr. Dawn Davis is also here. She's with Cape Veterinary Clinic in South Portland. And Dr. Ginger Brown Johnson with the Veterinary and Rehabilitation Center of Cape Elizabeth. Roddy Nickpour ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives at mainecalling.net. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Monday on the program, Understanding How Organ Donation Works. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.